This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me on Twitter at Conkers3 and I'm here with my colleague Wheelie Dealer, who you can find on Twitter at Wheelie Dealer. This is episode 83 and the date is the 7th of September and the time is just nearly 5:30 p.m. in the UK. Hello and welcome to all our UK listeners, US, Canada, and the rest of Europe, Australia as well, and other parts of the world. Welcome back to this madhouse that is the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. The feedback we've had for number 82 has been absolutely phenomenal. You, ladies and gents, enjoyed our chat about the stocks, the market, the noise, concerns about the markets we had, indebtedness and all other things we talked about on that particular one. And obviously, there was an absolute huge outpouring because we had a conversation and really kindly shared through, you know, much difficulty, the fact we had all lost a very good friend of ours, which was Stephen Holsworth. So we just wanted to thank everyone for their kindness that they showed to Steve with his passing. So thank you all for your kindness regarding that. I know his family really, really appreciate it. And when we get some more news on what's happening regarding his funeral, if we do, we'll try and share that with you all as well. Pete, how are you, mate?
Yeah, well, I was saying to you earlier, you know, I sort of feel like my health is improving, although I hate saying that because I feel there's been so many false dawns. So, you know, I'm on this new regimen of taking more drugs and being obsessive about my diet. Hopefully that is going to fix it. So that's good. But I mean, obviously, when it comes to markets and that, things aren't so good. And it's been...
Can I just interrupt you there? Can I just make sure that all of our audience, wherever they are in the world, know that you're taking drugs that have been prescribed?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Yeah, my local drug dealer said it was fine that I take them. Oh, God, you've completely thrown me now, mate. No, let's get on the markets before it slips my mind. No, since we recorded TPI 82 a couple of weeks ago, and today we're recording this on Wednesday, the 7th of September, and it sort of, you know, it's after the market shut about 5:30. And, you know, last week was pretty, some pretty steep falls. Then it sort of calmed down at the end of last week. And then this week has been really very choppy. You know, we're on Wednesday and we've had three really choppy days. I don't think I've lost a huge amount of money this week. I think last week I contained the losses because my hedging had been quite well timed, but I'm now completely unhedged, which leaves me a bit exposed if we get further falls. But I'm really, I can't read what's going to happen at all. I get a real feeling of, oh my God, everything's absolutely terrible. But then I look at the markets and they haven't really taken the opportunity to drop lower yet. And I don't know, that's strange. I find that's, what's your thinking, mate?
The markets, 2 weeks ago, we had the conversation about the markets and then additional volatility came in. I think they were getting worried about what the Fed was going to do next and all the rest of it. So we've caved in, haven't we? You know, we didn't really hit that 7,600 marker that we thought would be the top and main resistance. We got to 500 and odd, 7,500. And then a bit more volatility happened. We actually went, I think it was sub 7.2 a few days back. And then we had a bit of a move yesterday with the talk regarding Liz Truss had won, and so on and so forth, and she's going to throw all this money at the markets. So we had a bit of a move upwards yesterday, and I think at one point we were above 7,300. So, you know, I think we, I'm not sure if we more or less closed on that or there or thereabouts yesterday. And then this market is giving it back up again. Today on the market, it's giving it back up again. So the FTSE's down 62 points as it, a close at 7,237. Obviously, that's better than when, you know, Monday when it was near to 7,100 or there or thereabouts. FTSE 250, 18,881. That's just flat, really, which is really good. Yeah. FTSE All Share, 3,976. And I always say, keep an eye out, because that's a gauge of the market for me, the FTSE All Share. That 4,000 sort of, you know, tide mark is quite important for the All Share. And again, we're below that again. FTSE AIM All Share just seems to be ebbing lower and lower. And now it's at 866, a long way now, it seems, from 1,000, which really was going to be the let's hold there, let's hold there. And it's not Spartacus, mate. It's not staying there at all. It's giving it up, and we're now sub 900. Yeah, we're sub 900 now. The interesting thing, Pete, and I was going to ask you this regarding your hedging, but I'll come to it in a little bit later on.
Yeah,
is that the US markets have been very, very volatile as always, and it tends to lead what happens to us. The S&P 500 is again back below 4,000. It's at the minute. When I wrote this down earlier on about half an hour ago, it was at 3,943. So again, sub 4,000 on the S&P 500. NASDAQ was still below 12,000. And that's at 11,668. It's having a good move today at the moment. Still got X amount of hours left to go in their trading day. But that was up 1% today. S&P's up just sub 1%, 0.9%. And then you've got the Dow, which was down, right? The global Dow was down a little bit. So that was down a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. The interesting thing this week has been oil, which has been the bench for everything else to go up. And the FTSE, you know, Shell, BP, when that goes up, the FTSE is really quite strong.
Yeah.
Oil has been drifting down of late. You know what I mean? We're now at $83 a barrel, having been way up there only over the last month or so. Obviously, we as punters haven't seen that at the petrol pumps. They haven't come down as fast as, you know, as it's got actually come down. But hey ho, what can we say about that? But what I wanted to ask you, Pete, was the DAX hedge that you had. We spoke about it last time. It was the first time you'd put it on for, if ever. Yeah. And what had happened with the DAX since we spoke about it 2 weeks ago, and what happened with your hedge, and whether you traded it profitably.
Yeah, well basically, I took a tiny loss on my overall hedging positions. But the important thing was I'd got into a situation from several weeks ago where I'd placed a sizable hedge on the FTSE 100 sort of before we had that big move up, you know, when all the markets rallied quite well. So that was quite a painful, awkward situation. I mean, I was making money with those moves up because it was only, say, 30% of my portfolio, of the long portfolio. So I was having this sort of drag that I was carrying. So I wanted to get that situation unwound, if you like, you know, resolved. So the hedges I added on the S&P 500 and the hedges on the DAX effectively meant that I'd shorted much higher up. So once it all started falling again for most of last week, it quickly got me down to a situation where I was actually in profit overall at one point. Then what happened was on the Thursday last week, I saw some technical signs that made me think, this market wants to bounce. And not only did I see that, it was also the fact we were coming into the US non-farm payrolls on Friday. And I didn't want to be carrying a big short position because I'd added to it. I think it was nearly 50%. It was about 45% short on my whole portfolio. I didn't want to be carrying that into the jobs numbers, because obviously if the market jumped, I was going to be in trouble. So I made the executive decision to just close them all, take the hit, solve the problem that had been dogging me for some time, and then be able to reassess the situation and not have the problem on Friday. As it happens, Friday did something really funny, because it Fridays are mad. I always have this thing that Fridays are weird, and they so often are. And what it did this time was it jumped really strongly on the US non-farm payroll numbers coming out. But then by the end of the day, I think it all dropped again. And you just think, this is just bonkers. And
it's Traders Day, Pete. Friday is Traders Day. They're closing the book and they're going away for the weekend.
It's low
volume. The leverage bets are all off by 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the UK, and equally the same in the US. You know, they're not going to run it. Many things run over the weekend. They also had Labor Day, didn't they, as well?
Well, yeah, you had the Labor Day holiday as well. So I just thought, with all these things happening, and like I say, I could see technical signals, like the RSIs were pretty low. We were getting some candlestick reversals, and I just thought, I don't like having this short position. So I got out of it. But it's really interesting now, because now, of course, I'm thinking, should I still have hedges on? And yet, to be honest, like I said earlier, it's like, despite all of the gloom and doom, and I'm not being funny, in all my investing life, and probably in most of my adult life, I've never known so many nasty economic factors. I mean, the whole gas price thing, and the latest one that seems to be rearing its very, very ugly head, is there's a lot of worries about the UK government debt situation. I mean, touch wood, we're not going to get that bad, but there is a lot of fear that there could be a sterling crisis, you know, a crisis in the pound. And I mean, already the pound has been pummeled this year, along with pretty much every other currency apart from the dollar. So it's partly a dollar rush to safety thing. But the fact that the government, UK government debt, gilt, their yields have been rising, particularly in the last week or so.
Yeah.
And that's a concern, you know. And if something happens there, then, I mean, things are ugly now, but they'll get even uglier. And you just think, well, this is such a crazy time.
So it's a crazy time. And this is before the helicopter money is thrown around by Liz Truss, who, you know, we can talk about in a minute,
They're doing the opposite, aren't they? Because what's actually happening is all the QE that was pumped into the system over the last 10 years or whatever is being unwound. It's going the other way. And you just think, all these things, there's so much going on. It's an incredibly difficult time. And this is why I love it when the fundamental situation on a stock, on a market, on anything, when a fundamental situation ties up with the chart technical situation. Whereas now we seem to be in a situation where the sort of fundamentals of the economy and whatever look flipping terrible, and yet the charts and the technicals don't really look as bad. And someone commented on Twitter the other day that, you know, it's like, for the terrible situation we have around us, you would think markets would be lower, and they're not.
Because they're being propped up, Pete, at the moment. You know, there's all that fear, there's all that noise, there's all those headwinds, and people are going, oh, but that's going to come down the pipe, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that, and therefore we'll be all right. I've been negative in the markets for quite a while now. And, you know, the market didn't push through 7,550 on the FTSE. We're seeing more and more companies coming out with profit warnings now, talking about all these different capex costs, you know, which they weren't talking about this time last year. There are very few companies that have hedged properly for this energy crisis and this particular increase in costs all around. And there's very few companies that can actually pass on all these costs. The ones that can will do extremely well. And there's going to be a handful of companies that probably will be able to do extremely well. But a lot of the companies that other people are talking about, that, you know, this is my stock that I'm going to hold forever and ever, amen, they're going to be feeling a little bit of pain over the next 3 to 6 months to 12 months, because some of those costs are going to keep creeping through. You see on the RNSs now, if you read them carefully enough, these companies are talking about all these increasing costs and are we working through this? Are we sorting it out? And the ones that are saying, yes, we've got this under control, their share price stays flat. The ones that have said, oh, we've got this handled and we've exceeded or are ahead, they're off to the races. The ones that dare say we've not got this under control, we're worrying, we're finding it challenging, gosh, 10%, 15, 20, 35, they're gone, schooled. They've been schooled. And the people that were holding that stock and were championing that stock, mute, quiet, no comment on Twitter, just disappeared. You know, and my concern regarding this, and I always feel like I'm saying it on every single podcast, I say to people, please do your own research. Please find a stock that you like that's off the radar. The people that are there talking up that stock and that stock will not be there to safeguard you when the profit warning comes. Yeah, and on the rare occasions that they get it right and the company gets taken over or the share price pops to 20%, that's a 1 in 10. The other 9 times, you're going to get hurt. So just be careful out there. Careful out there. Do your own research. You know, find the stats that you want to find and then decide and make your own mistakes. Because there's going to be so many stocks over the next 6 to 12 months that get absolutely a shellacking. You know, I'm not sure if we touched on Cineworld in the last one, Pete. I can't remember. I've had so much going on in my head.
But, no, I'm not sure we did, but...
Yeah. So that's on the cusp of bankruptcy. Yeah, oh, yeah, I think we spoke about it ages ago on many moons of podcast ago regarding the level of indebtedness with that big purchase they made in the US. And, you know, there's still people trading that. I'm like, really? You know, it's essentially gone.
Yeah.
You know, they can't service the debt. You know, speaking to these fund managers, and I spoke to another one today, you just got to avoid companies that are heavily, heavily indebted. Spoke to Gervais Williams. If you've not seen that podcast yet or listened to that podcast, you can find it on the Investing Matters handle and also via my tweets. So I interviewed Gervais Williams of Premier Miton, probably one of the best small cap investors over the past 35, 40 years. He's just been at the top of his game for that long. You really need to go and have a listen to that podcast because it's absolutely on point regarding all the things that you, me, and everyone else does wrong. And these are the things we need to do in order to get better at investing in small caps and what to look out for. I think if you can master investing in small caps and reduce the volatility and end up with the stocks that are not making profit warnings every 2 or 3 years, I think that's the way to go, because the conversation we're having was about, you know, small caps taking over, in a sense of the large caps have had their run and the growth of small caps, we're going to see that return to the innovative small cap companies. The larger caps will actually, you know, be struggling with the growth of the smaller ones. So small versus large caps.
Joe, that's an interesting point, because it ties up with another thought I've had. And it's like, as much as we talk about the gloom and doom, as much as we talk about the technical picture, as much as we talk about profit warnings and all that kind of thing, I think when you look at small companies, if you think about it, right, the AIM market and pretty much the FTSE 250 and the FTSE small caps, they've all been falling for all of 2022. So, yeah, we're in September now. So we've had 9 months falling there. You could argue that the rot sort of started around April 2021. That was sort of when it actually peaked a little bit afterwards.
February 2020. Yeah, it kicked off, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it was quite that far back, but okay, if it was Feb 2020, then it gets even worse. And it's almost like we've had a really long period where the markets and all the investors and traders have been price discovery. They've been trying to work out what are things really worth. And I sort of feel where we are now in September 2022, it's like I'm seeing a lot of stocks that look flipping cheap. And I'm seeing a lot of stocks that are doing all right that look pretty good value. I'm still seeing the odd one that's coming out of profit warnings, but I've noticed with some that have done profit warnings, they haven't really tanked in the way they would have done 3 or 4 months ago. You know, whereas they would have dropped 30%, now they're only dropping 10 because they've already fallen so much. And I wonder, and we're also getting the better companies, the ones that have managed the situation better and are able to pass on some of these costs and do still have demand and whatever. It's almost like a sifting process where the wheat is the goats are being separated from the sheep, the wheat from the chaff. And it's almost like that process has been going on for so flipping long now. I'm wondering if maybe we are getting near the stage where we won't see the markets fall quite as much because so much of the falling has been done. It's almost like a lot of the rubbish stuff is so low now, even if it falls, it doesn't really affect the wider market because it's become a smaller proportion of it. So I don't know.
That's a good analogy, and that's very, very possible, Pete. Part of what you're talking about there is this survivorship bias. So the better quality companies will survive and they will do okay. And the other ones get, you know, like within our own portfolios, they go from being a 3% position to a 1.5% and a 1%. And then they don't really impact us that much regarding the portfolio. Just sitting there going, yes, it's going to be red for a little while. So there's going to be stocks like that. I think what's also happening, Pete, is that you've got some people in the market that are long-term investors that have bought that particular stock that was a good stock, but it's going through that flux at the minute and has been going through that flux for about a year and a bit now.
Yeah.
And the share price has drifted because it's not been performing as well as it should do. And the stocks that have been performing have outperformed that particular one. So that's just sitting there and it's languishing. It's a laggard regarding the poor performances of certain sort of stocks. Yeah. And invariably what happens then is that you're sitting there thinking, if you don't hold it, you're sitting there going, it's down 30%, I'm going to have to wait. But everyone else is thinking, it's down 30% from its peak, it's down 40% from its peak. That's cheap. There's actually people nibbling away at your stock. It's not pushing the price up that much.
Yeah.
It's not, because you can see when it's moving because the volume increases. I look at the 90-day moving average for the volume on the stock, right? And if that 90-day moving average has gone up 50%, I'm like, I'm curious going, what's going on there? I'm always looking at that. So 90-day moving average on the volume, I'm on it. And if it goes up more than 50%.
Is that something you find on SharePad?
No, find it elsewhere.
Okay.
Well, you can put those metrics into
SharePad. It might be on SharePad.
It might be on SharePad.
Yeah.
I've been using something for years now I don't really talk about.
What's that? The 90-day
moving average. Yeah. Moving average of the volume, right? So you get 90 days of volume, and then you get 1 day, i.e. Tuesday, of yesterday, and the volume is 50% greater than
the usual.
The whole 90 days previously.
Yeah.
And if that's a day when the share price has moved up, buyers are coming in. You've got to be alert to that because something's going on there. Is it an institution buying, right? Or has somebody got wind of something going on? Because if you get an increase in volume, the share price is going down, who's selling? Why is it suddenly got a spike in volume and it's down 5% when there's no news? Volume, no news. Have to keep an eye out on it.
On SharePad, I've got the volume bars set up at the bottom of one of my charts. So what it does, it has it's like a histogram. It's like a bar of how much volume there was. And you can look exactly at that and you can see when the volume is spiking up and stuff.
You should be able to put that so you measure that. So your thing going across the whole of the bars is 90. You should be able to add that in there. Yeah.
If you want to
use the 50-day, you can use the 50-day.
I got a feeling I haven't got it on individual stocks with SharePad. You might get it with ShareScope because that's a higher level product, obviously.
Just check it out. Just ask the questions.
Cool.
Just ask the questions.
No, it's interesting.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So Pete, I need to go back to what I was saying on the last one. And I said I'd come back and talk a bit more about my strategy of finding stocks that had got taken over and so on and so forth. And bizarrely, since the podcast happened and was recorded, another takeover occurred, right? So the third takeover occurred, the third in 3 weeks. And that was Micro Focus, Pete.
Yeah.
and it's been an absolute dog for many people. I was still holding it. Yeah, I was still holding it. My contract notes are there, and I've talked about.
I remember you had it. I'm sure we talked about it on the podcast ages ago.
We talked about it. So I purchased it essentially at. Let me just get my dates right here. The 20th of July, 2020. So we're coming up for 2 years, right, Pete? At £2.90. And the 16th of November at £2.70 the same year, 2020, right? I'd done some of the parts analysis, intrinsic value analysis, right? And my Bible for this, and I've been refining it for now for 20 odd plus years, and I forgot to mention it in the last podcast, is called The Security Analysis Book, right? By Benjamin Graham, David L. Dodd. And it's been updated by and with commentary from Seth Klarnan, James Grant, Bruce Greenwald, however you want to pronounce it. But that's the book that I use to try and refine this sort of stuff, because it's very, very complicated. But people might think I'm mad here and I got my maths completely wrong. But have a look at the chart, right? The chart of Micro Focus is absolutely dreadful. So I was buying 2 years ago in July and November. And my sum of the parts analysis, and this is me looking for a margin of safety here. What if you're wrong? Okay. And my sum of the parts analysis for Micro Focus was £9.60, more than £9.60. Yeah. I was able to buy it at £2.90 and £2.70, right? So I'm saying to myself, I am getting essentially near four times more in value than the market's allowing for this particular stock. Goes to a fiver, gets to knit towards £6, happy days. Then bad news. And it gets almost back to where I started from. I think it got there in about 6 months or so after I bought it. It was at five quid. I was like, got this one right, mate. Happy days. I'm gonna get my £9, Pete, right? I'm gonna get my £9.
Yeah, yeah.
Market goes, no, you're not. No, you're not. Just keep smashing it down. More bad news. And then you're getting all this other stuff going on. And everything that they could do wrong with the stock just happened. So it's down there again at £4, £3, some £3. I'm going, this is just not what. But because I'd done my research on the stock and I knew what I thought the value was, I wasn't going to be selling it, Pete.
You could have conviction because you
could have conviction.
Pretty and sure it was worth more, yeah.
And having conviction does not mean you are right.
you can be very wrong.
The market is there to make a fool out of every single one of us, and it does it every day. And it's made a fool out of me more times than I care to recall. So, but anyway, thankfully, OpenTex came out and made a 98.3% premium bid, Pete, for it. Lovely. And it rallied to price. I think the price point was £5.32 is what they've offered for it.
Yeah.
I suspect and I hope that other people come out of the woodwork. The likes of IBM, Accenture, Amazon have got an entity stake, obviously, in Micro Focus as well. I don't think very much that they will buy it. I can't see the reasons why. But hopefully other companies will, or a private entity will. Sitting around £5.20-ish, £18 at the moment. But again, this is about doing the analysis. It's a lot of work, a lot of hours. People don't want to do it. But no one's going to say to you, I've done 200 hours of work. This is what the sum of the parts is, and give it you for free. You know, are you going to work for anyone and give them 20 hours, 200 hours of work for free? No, you're not. Well, right. Exactly. So you have to put the work in yourself to find these stocks. Yeah. Will there be another bid? I don't know. If there isn't,
it doesn't matter. I mean, you've done very well on it.
This one's just got to be cemented. I say I'm not concerned. They want this, and if they don't, other people will come and get it. I've done well out of it. I'm looking to get some more out of it, so I'm waiting to see what happens. As takeovers go, I don't think there's anyone on Twitter that has had more takeovers than me in the past 8 years. So I'm on 51. I will get my 52 and 53 before the year is out, because that's what's happening. The Americans and the overseas private equities are coming here. Why? Because sterling is down 15, 16, 20% in the past year and a bit. We've already got a discount regarding UK stocks, not just tech stocks, of 15, 20%. So they're getting it 30% cheaper. They're getting it. So that's why they're all coming. Shop, 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 buy, buy, buy. Another takeover today.
Well, exactly. GBG was another one today, wasn't it? Another puzzle.
Potentially.
But this is interesting because it slightly links back to the discussion we just had about markets and the separating the sheep from the goats. This is all part of that process. And I think, you know, the markets are going to be held up by the simple fact that people are starting to think, oh, there's a lot of really nice morsels here for takeovers. And people who are holding them are thinking, well, I'm not going to sell it because I think it could be taken over. And buyers are thinking, oh, that could be taken over. I'm going to buy it. And that adds support to the market. So, yeah, and I think your point about sterling is bang on. The fact that the pound, I mean, I was saying on Twitter a couple of days ago, I remember when it was $2 to the pound. And it's nearly $1 to a pound now.
You were in short pants when it was $2 to a pound, mate. Come on.
It was a while ago. Let's be honest. But yeah.
So if there is talk about takeover crowns and all the rest of it, there's only one person wearing a takeover crown, and that's me.
Mate, you are absolutely flying with it. Absolutely flying.
And there's more to come. There's going to be more takeovers, Pete. I've been saying this for about as long as people listen. There are more takeovers in your portfolio right now, people. If you've got some quality stocks that are undervalued, one of those stocks in your portfolio will be taken over in the next year. I guarantee it. If it's a quality stock and it's got a global reach, it will be getting taken over. And if it's not got a global reach, the other UK listed companies are going to be thinking, let's have that as a bolt-on. If it's small enough, they'll be buying it. There's going to be consolidation because of the costs that are going up. People, some companies won't be able to pass on that cost. So there's going to be consolidation in various different spaces. So inwardly and globally, there's going to be more takeovers going on. But we're going to be the ones being taken over more often than not in the UK. We're not going to be going to the overseas and taking over any companies. It's more expensive for us.
It's also a factor of this thing of the winners and losers. The winners are going to be in strong positions to be able to buy these losers. And there's going to be a lot of that going on. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Tell us about the charity, mate, a little bit. Tell us what we've got funds-wise. I'll have a break here and just then we'll get into some stocks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Every year with the Twin Peaks podcast, we basically recommend a charity that some of that we're interested in. And if people can help donate towards this charity as a bit of a thank you for what we do on the Twin Peaks podcast and for various other things that me and Peter do, because you're probably aware that we never charge for anything. And anyway, the charity we're recommending this year is the Backup Trust. Now, I'm spinally injured. I'm a T3, so it means I'm paralyzed at chest level, T3 paraplegic. So I'm a wheelchair user. That's this thing over here that you can't see. I had to look and see if it was still there. The Backup Trust is a charity that does a lot of good work for people who've had spinal injuries. And I remember back in 23, 24 years ago when I was first injured, I did a couple of things with Backup. Like I actually did their wheelchair skills training course thing, which was great, you know. And I did something on some skiing in the Tamworth Snow Dome and froze my Watsits off. But they do some really good stuff and they do a lot that really helps people on the sort of psychological side, because obviously having a pretty serious life-changing injury, it's going to be hard on the psychology, I find, especially for younger people. And they do a lot of work with kids and stuff as to help help children sort of, you know, develop, be able to push their lives forward, even though they've got spinal injuries or whatever. So it's a really good charity and it does some good stuff. If you want to help, if you want to contribute something, I mean, you know, whatever you can, you know, five or ten, it doesn't matter. Go to justgiving.com/fundraising/Twin Peaks. If you go to my Wheelie Dealer 2 website and go to the podcast page, there's a link at the top of the page for the thing if you forget it. And we tend to put it around on Twitter a few times, and Peter adds it when the first iteration of each podcast comes out. He puts the link on as well there. I was going to read out a couple. We've had a good load of donations. We still haven't quite hit that 2,000 level, but it'd be nice if we can get it over that 2,000. I'll read out a few. These are a few from the past, because I've noticed we've had something like 50 people donate, which is brilliant. So thank you, everybody. But I don't think we've read 50 comments out. So I'm just going to try and catch up on a few. So I've gone back in time a bit. One that comes up is Nigel Donati. Thank you very much. Keep up the great work, gents. Now, the funny thing is, I'm pretty sure I've seen his name a few times. So I think Nigel's made a few contributions. So thank you for that. It's fantastic. Kevin and Joanne Taylor. We know Kevin. So thanks, mate. That's fantastic. Really nice donation of 100 quid. Keep up the good work, chaps. Cheers, mate. That's brilliant.
Thank you very much. That's great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Malcolm Reed. Really enjoyed that, men. Definitely no millstone. Oh, that was when we were referring to milestones and millstones. So, yeah, keep up the great work. And a nice contribution there. And someone I know well, Ansuman, keep up the excellent work, chaps. Your discussions and views are incredibly useful. I've learned a tremendous amount listening and following to you too. So that's brilliant. And another one I know a lot, he appears on Twitter a lot, the Quality Small Cap Investor, a good guy. A great cause, happy to give donation to the two Pete, who easily fall into my top 100 favourite podcasts. Love it.
Top 100, that's very generous of him.
Brilliant, I love that. That just appeals to my...
Quality's always got something smart to say, mate. Smashing it.
That appeals to my warped sense of humour.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, that's brilliant. But yeah, so anything you can give to help, that would be fantastic. Obviously, it's tough times for charities. Well, it's tough times for everybody. I understand that. And, if you can't afford to give something, fair enough, you know. But if you can give a little bit, then brilliant. Please help us, yeah?
Yeah. Thank you all for your support so far. We will get through the 2,000 barrier, Pete, because I know we've got a generous group of people that consume this podcast on a fortnightly basis. I want to give a couple of shout outs, if I may, Pete, while we're having this little break. And this is one of our regular sort of supporters as well. He's been giving us, I'm not sure if it's a he. You might know if it's a he, Pete, because I know you know that you've met all the ladies and all the blokes that follow us on here. Child of the 70s, at Child of the 70s.
I know him, it's Neil. Neil, good guy. Good bloke, male. Neil. Neil, yeah. Well, Neil.
Neil or Mel?
Yeah, I've met him. I think he's male.
His male is called Neil, or his male is called Mel?
He's called Neil, and he's definitely a bloke.
Right, okay, we've got that. Neil, thank you very much. He wrote... Let me finish.
Let me finish.
Oh, my gosh. I listened to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 82 yesterday with Conkers and Wheelie. Really enjoyed the discussion on the SOTP and examples of intrinsic value ratios to consider, as well as scaling into new investments rather than adopting a gung-ho approach. Thank you both. So that was one of the feedbacks we got. So thank you, Neil, for that one. And then we had... we had Paul... A-hole, as in, Hardall, sorry, apologies, Paul.
Hardall.
And he wrote, good stuff for everyone interested in valuations regarding the discussion we had as well, Pete. So that was really a bit of good feedback there. You've already done the, and then we had, yeah, Growth Invest gave us another one as well. And he was saying, thank you for the great podcast and the conversation around Darktrace as well. So we had a few, and all the ones that were given will be in the write-up with and attached to this particular link to the Conkers 3 website. So that was just some of the podcast sort of feedback we had. There's loads more besides that, but I just want to say to everybody that's enjoyed the podcast, please just share it on your Twitter feed. Please give us your feedback regarding the good, the bad, and the indifferent that you liked about it, because we're still trying to build the audience as we go along. We haven't got there yet, my goal has always been to try and get us to about 5,000 listeners regarding the podcast going out. So that means we're competing and up there or not far away from what the actual FT do and the likes of Investors Chronicle do and the likes of Shares Mag do. If we can get to 5, I'd be very, very happy indeed. We're halfway there at the moment, so we've got a long way to go. So we just need you guys, ladies, to support us and reshare and just help other people to become aware of it. If you've liked it and you've got 10 followers, share it with your 10 followers. If you've got 10,000 followers, share it with 10,000 followers. They may like it too. There might be something in there that they actually benefit from learning regarding this podcast. So please just share it and subscribe freely to all the different platforms we're on. So thank you very much for your support. Pete, go.
Right. Okay, mate, I've got a question for you. I want to ask you about, you know, the idea of stop losses. Yeah. So the sort of conventional. Now, this links back to something I raised on, I think it was on TPI 82, where I was talking about this idea of getting more momentum into my portfolio. And one of the things that obviously links to that is the idea of stop losses. Yeah. So it's that you buy a stock and, you know, the stock goes against you and 15% below or 10% or 20%, you sell the position, you move on, you take the hit, you move on. And it's all about small losses and whatever. Now, that's a sort of normal stop loss. I'm not a huge fan of those for stock investing, a bit like you said with MCRO, Microfocus. You know, if you'd have used the stop loss, you'd have been out of it and you'd have never got your takeover. So, you know, it's, I think for long-term investing, it's not necessarily that compatible. However, what I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on was the idea of a time-related stop loss. So it's almost like you could set it, you could say, I'll buy this stock, I'm prepared to hold this stock for 2 years. If it's down 20% from my entry price in 2 years' time, then it goes. It just gets sold automatically. You know, like I just don't have any emotion. That's the rules. I get rid of it. So as you see what I mean, like, so it's almost like, because I think it's very easy to buy a stock and then the stock basically just does nothing for 2-3 years. It's very possible to do that. And I think I've had a few of those in my time. And I'm wondering how best to get rid of that problem. And it's almost like saying, well, look, if it hasn't done anything after 2 years or even 3 years, it's got to go, you know? Well, what's your thinking, mate?
There's a couple of routes to that, Pete. I think the first one, if you're being ruthless and you want to be completely unbiased, is not to wait 2 years, is just to use the technical analysis which you use all the time and have a look at actually what's happening with the stock. And if the market is going up and up and your stock, good quality stock, good management, coming out with good sort of results, isn't moving, then either it's taken a lot more time to get them into the arena where people are aware of them, or it's simply a case of actually there's something underlying here, you know, the distrust of the stock, the management and so on and so forth. There's a few stocks we've talked about in the past, which the market simply doesn't like. It doesn't matter what the results come out, what they give to the market. The market goes, meh, not interested. And there's other stocks, no matter what they do, the market's like it and it goes up. It's like, this makes no rhyme or reason. There's popular stocks, there's unpopular and unloved stocks. The other thing I would say as well, Pete, is that some of the stocks that have been the most successful for me haven't done anything for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So you had Lake, which was sitting there, and you had ITM that was sitting there. So I've gone into the hydrogen space. Everyone's gone, what an idiot. What an absolute loon, right? 2 years going nowhere. And then all of a sudden, people start talking about hydrogen. Whoosh, it's up 30 bag. Same with Lake, lithium, off the radar. No one's talking about it. Poo-pooed it. And batteries, what a lot of rubbish. Not happening. Whoosh, 30%. 30 bagger, right? And then there's other stocks in the retail space, in the tech space, that you can hold for 2 years. And the reasons why it's not going anywhere, right, is because there's other companies within that space. Yours is a good company, But there's other companies in that space that are doing better in that space, listed and unlisted. You won't get much noise and talk about the ones that are unlisted because the market doesn't really talk about that stock down the road that's in Basildon, or that stock down the road that's in Chepstow that's doing extremely well, that's actually beating its listed peer.
Yeah.
Pete. And there's others globally that are beating the listed peer. So your stock could be sitting there languishing, going nowhere, because someone else down the road that's unlisted is beating it and smashing it to ribbons. And you'll never know that because you haven't looked who are its competitors. And some of the competitors are unlisted folks. It's not just looking into Investors Chronicle Shares Mag and Non-Stock and Stockopedia and ShareScope for the other companies in that sector. Some of them are unlisted, and the vast majority of them are probably unlisted. So you need to have a look at what those
are. A lot are overseas. Yeah, overseas.
And a lot are overseas, as I said. Yeah. As I said, yeah. So unlisted and overseas. So that could end up being a situation. So the reason why you're languishing and it's not doing anything and you're having this dead cost, is because it's sitting there and doing nothing. And the longer you hold that stock, the longer that money is not doing anything material to your portfolio. So whether it's 2K, 20K or 200K, sitting there making no money, that's anchoring your portfolio. It's doing nothing, you know. And we always talk on here about being patient. You can be patient in the stock when you know the value of the stock, but also when you truly know what's going on regarding that stock. And I thought I knew what was going on with GSK. I thought I knew what was going on with Haleon. And then the news came out. I saw the market dropping. I was going, these guys are nuts. What's going on here? What's happening with GSK? Drift, 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 drift. And then one day it comes out and it's been an old legacy issue. Oh, we're talking about Zantac again. I'm going, what? I'm out of here. I'm done. And I sold it at 15 odd, right? It's now nearer to 13 and a half GSK. It's gone down from 18 to 13 and a half quid. Haleon is sitting there or thereabouts, but it's dropping again. So I thought I knew it. I've done all the research, stupid amount of hours. This got spun off for Haleon. And then Zantac comes out again. I'm going, I don't need that noise. I'm down. I'm out of here. Yes, it's still on my watch list, but this thing is going to roll and roll and roll, Pete. You know
what you've done there, in a way, is similar to sell on a profit warning. It's a bit like that, isn't it? A particular piece of news has come out that's obviously adverse, and you've just said, right, it's out, and you've taken no nonsense.
Fraud and litigation, mate. I mean, that sounds a bit of an irony when I say to myself, I've still got, you know, lit as a litigation company. That's me trying to work the other side of the grid. But you get what I'm saying. Fraud and litigation. It's like, come on. It just drags. And then they come out with FDA approval this and FDA approval that. Mark is going, meh, we're worried about how much you're going to get hit by. So I'm like, I can put that money elsewhere and invest it.
I guess on this thing of dead stocks, we need to make a distinction in a way. And it's almost like, I mean, I'm just thinking off the cuff here, so I've literally just thought this up. It could be there's sort of three types of stocks. It could be there's your sort of more what I would call early stage stocks, like your Lake Resources and your battery one, which are ones that if they work, they're going to be big baggers, you know? Obviously, if they don't work, you're going to lose whatever money you've got in it, whatever. You've then got stocks that I would say are income stocks. Now, if you've got an income stock that's gone sideways for 3 years, 4 years, whatever, I bet there are loads of those. I could show you charts of stocks that have literally just gone like that for three or four years.
The FTSE 350 have gone nowhere for 20 years, but the people that have been having the dividends, 3%, 5%, have compounded that and made a significant amount of money.
If you're picking
You can actually profit from having a good stock paying you 3 to 5% compounded over 20 years and beat most people, Pete.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's worth making that distinction. So you wouldn't have a time stop loss on an income stock that's paying you 5, 6, 7% a year. Be stupid. But then you've got these other stocks in the middle, which are the ones where maybe a time stop loss would be more appropriate. And so it's just some thoughts I'm having and just wondering. I mean, maybe there's, you know, I mentioned the idea of sort of, you know, you could say, hold it for 2 years. If it's down 20%, it goes. Or you might just say, hold it for 2 years. If it hasn't gained 20%, then it goes. So you could have various criteria But your rules would have to be clear, and you would have to follow those rules. You wouldn't be allowed.
So being devil's advocate, Pete, yeah. I've bought the stock. I've done all the research. If I'm sticking with your methodology, what happens to my stock that I've just bought? That I'm going, I bought a great stock here. And within 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it's down 20%. Do I still hang on for 2 years?
Yeah,
it goes down to 40% or 60%. Yeah.
Well,
how does that make sense then? If I'm saying the criteria is 20% and it's already hit 20%, why wait another 18 months?
Because you're giving it more time to play out. Because I think so often, I mean, I've seen it so many times where a stock can be down 20% and then it ends up being one that's taken over and you could have made a fortune.
I have. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you.
And it's that thing of how much time do you give them?
I would sooner, with the stocks I've got no conviction in, Pete, I would sooner give it the metric of stop loss at 15, 20%, I'm out, right? And so, I can watch it, bear with me, and I can watch it for the next 18 months. And if it starts to move back up again, I can buy it for a tad more, tad higher, right?
Yeah.
However, if it drops and drops and drops over the next 18 months, right, I can buy it as cheap as chips then.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than being the person 2 years later going, well, I could have sold it at 20% and now it's now 45, 60% lower. Why did I wait this long to get rid of it? And the problem is you're now anchored to it because you've held it for 2 years and it's now not 20% down, it's 60% down.
Yeah. You made an important point at the start of that segment. You said a stock I've got low conviction in. You said a stock I've got low conviction in, it might be worth having a 20% stop loss. So I think that's an interesting point about the level of conviction.
Another nuance, mate.
And it's almost like how you've done the analysis and what your rationale for buying it was. So something like MicroStrategy, where you'd done a serious sum of the parts valuation.
Micro Focus,
and you thought it was worth like four times the price you would be able to buy it at. On something like that, it would be probably the wrong thing to have a kind of stop loss. But if there's something else that you bought that you think is, this is going to be a really good growth stock and I can see a catalyst
to make
it go.
Let me be perfectly honest with you. I bought it at 270, 290. It's now, two or three weeks ago, it was sitting there or thereabouts, if not lower than that, right?
Yeah.
Everything that could go wrong with it was going wrong with it. Yeah. I had £9 in my head on that stock, right? And I'm looking at it going, these guys, and I've used this term, it's a northern term, they can't get out of their own way, right? And at some point or other, irrespective of me doing all that work and analysis on it and thinking and feeling and knowing it was worth £9, I would have got rid of it. Conviction or no conviction, if the management aren't doing it, Pete, you've got to get rid.
It's got to go, yeah.
You've got to get rid, mate.
Yeah.
No, it would have gone. Whether it be in the next 3 months or 6 months, I would have gone. You've had enough of my time.
Yeah, that makes sense, mate. That makes sense.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPETES promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Mate, do you want to talk about some stocks?
I do. I'm going to talk about one little stock and then I've got two bits of information on another one. And I think this is a contrarian. Everyone knows I'm a contrarian investor, so I always go against the grain. In a sense of stocks, people go, why would you want to buy that now, Pete? I'm not saying I want to buy it now. It's on my radar. It's another one, just like Pete said at the beginning of the show, I think is as cheap as chips. Is it in the right sector? Probably not. Is it something that could get taken over? I don't know. But this is in a space where I think the market is punishing it before the SHITs that hit the fan, right? So bear with me here, folks, right? And Pete's eyebrows are going to go to the back of his head if I want to tell you the name of this stuff.
I'm not sure I've got any eyebrows.
but this is a stock that no one loves anymore. And there's really probably good reasons why, right? And I'll share some blurb on it as well, right? I don't hold a stock. Just something for you guys to go and have a look at, have a bit of research on, possibly add it to your watch list, so on and so on and so forth, right? So I'll give you the name, give you the some metrics on it, and I'll give you a little blurb on it, right? The company is called Page Group, formerly Michael Page. Yeah, ticker symbol, I think is PAGE, actually.
Yeah.
And the stock closed at £3.86 today, right? Price range near the bottom, right? So the bottom range is 374 versus the 386. And the high is £6.91. Currently on a PE of 7.6 from the where I looked. And the yield is 3.9%. Market cap, 1.27 billion. So it's not a small company, right? It's a global recruitment company. Yeah. All the talk of recession, talk of jobs going, people getting laid off, cost of employers, so on and so forth. So everything's working against it. However, recently it came out with half year results, which highlighted record financial operational performance, despite all the macro noise and all the rest of it. Yeah, and the geopolitical noise. And in the 6 months to the June 2022, gross profits grew 33.3% to 539 million. Not too shabby there, eh? And while operating profits increased by 79.4% to 115 million. Yeah. And gross pre-tax profits grew by 80% to 104, right? So operating versus pre-tax. So, yeah. So I've been having that on my radar, right? So they're obviously in the Americas, the UK, Asian Pacific. So it's a global business. It's not a UK business. It's a global business. And, you know, EMEA, which is all around Asia as well. So that to me is what it's about. Pays a decent dividend and good management. And they've been around for a very, very, very long time. So that's one I'm saying to folks. It's a bit contrarian. It's a bit like recruitment right now. People losing jobs. I'd keep an eye on it. Thoughts, Pete?
Well, I noticed the market cap. I think you said it, but I just checked again. It's just under £1.3 billion. That doesn't seem a lot to me. So I think it's the kind of stock that another recruitment business, a big one, could think, oh, I'm going to buy that because that would make a nice little add-on to what we do. I could see that happening. I find it a fascinating sector because I hold Empresaria, EMR, in that sector. And what I find really weird is that pretty much without exception, the recruitment companies are coming out with good results. And they have their outlook statements and they're positive. And you're thinking, this is really weird. There's the biggest recession we've ever had about to hit us. And yet recruiters are doing all right. And it seems to be linked to the shortage of workers. But I have been reading things that said that, you know, this shortage of workers in the technology space, they reckon that shortage might be easing a bit because you're getting a lot of crypto miners and God knows what else. People are working on crypto stuff are now not needed for crypto and they're being freed up and they're able to fill other tech roles. And I think there's a lot of that going on. I think that a lot of the tech companies have been feeling the heat, especially in America. And I think as a result, they've been, you know, there's been a lot of tech employees losing their jobs and it's sort of easing the pressure there. But I do find it a fascinating sector. And it's really interesting because Page is almost making like new lows for the year. I mean, the shares just go down and down and down.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Pete.
And it's what you were saying. It's like they were.
That's why I'm looking at the ones going lower and lower, Pete, not the ones that are going higher and higher when I'm buying, mate.
But it's amazing because it's like they're pricing in. It's like the market is pricing in disaster, and the disaster
I said the four-letter word earlier. I'm not going to say it again.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's really weird that it. I mean,
it could be right, Pete, and it could be right. It could be at £2 in the next 6 months. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Because this is my twisted thinking here, Pete, right? Market's pricing it in already, right? So it's all going to go, absolutely Pete Tong, right? So it's down there at its lows, right? We've got an energy crisis going on, right? And in Liz, we trust, and she's going to come throw some money at us in a little while. We'll see how it goes for the really
poor people,
right? We'll see how it goes, right? But what about if the ones that can work, right, that we're doing, meh amount of work, actually get so pushed as what's going on in America? We see the job market in America. You're thinking, wow, that's gone up. That's fantastic. Look how many people are back in work in America. It's not more and more people going back at work in America. They're doing one, two, three jobs, Pete. They've got a full-time job and two part-time jobs. So what if that happens in the UK and the recruiters are all run ragged because people are going, I can't afford to pay my bills.
I need another job.
My husband still wants to do that. My partner wants to do this and I can't afford it. I need another part-time job. What if that happens here? Or is this happening already with Paige and Presario and the others and the other recruiters? What if they're actually doing well because people are needing to do more work? I don't know the answer, but the share price is going that way. And the profitability and the profit before tax is going that way. Something's going to have to give at some point.
Yeah.
That's why I'm raising it. It's just an anomaly. And I like to find anomalies for people to have a look
at. Another way of looking at it is, as I said, the share price has just been going down and down and down. At some point, it will move into that sideways phase. That's what they nearly always do, unless it gets taken over before. But normally they go down, down, into the sideways. Once it gets into this sideways phase, that's the earliest that it's really safe to buy it. Yeah. And then when it breaks out, that's a brilliant time to buy more of it or buy it, whatever. But
I do my research, Pete, off the radar. I do my buying when no one else is talking about it. I don't pop out on the radar and go, oh, it's been taken over. There you go. I bought it. I bought it today or I bought it recently. No. If I'm going to talk about it, I'm talking about it. If I haven't talked about it, and I've bought it, I'll be coming out and say I bought it, and I'll give you the contract notes and everything else just as proof of integrity. Because I've got nothing to gain by trying to talk about stuff I don't own.
Mate, can we talk about one that I don't hold? I don't think you hold.
Yes. Oh, yeah, even better. Yes, please.
I'm not even sure we want to hold it. And in a way,
means I probably hold it then. All right, crack on. Get on with it.
It's one where I sort of like wonder what your thoughts on it are. And that is good old Shoezone, Shoe. It came out with pretty good results. And there's been a lot of.
For the viewers that are not watching on YouTube, I'm holding my nose right now. Carry on.
I'm having a heart attack. And there's been a lot of talk about.
Tell the zone from here, Pete.
Yeah, a lot of people getting excited and whatever. And I'm thinking, would I buy Shoezone? And I'm thinking, I don't think I would. And the reason I say that is that, I mean, they've had a lot of problems in the past anyway. You know, they listed, did all right for a bit, and then they had all sorts of problems and God knows what else. So it's not exactly got a great track record. And I just sort of think, instinctively, you think, well, cheap shoes should do well. But the trouble is, they're not the only people selling cheap shoes. It seems to be, I can go down the road to a out-of-town shopping centre thing, and there's loads of cheap shoe shops. And I personally just find it hard to get excited. What's your thinking on it?
Lots of people are talking it up. It's come out with recent results that surprised the markets. And the share price went up. It's one of those stocks where there's more wind behind the sales than there is sales behind the profitability. And they'll come out and say, we've upgraded our expectations again for the next quarter. This quarter was the back to school quarter, Pete. So betwixt now and winter, the stuff that they're going to be selling is Wellington boots. Yeah. I'm not sure anybody needs another pair of wellies. I'm being a bit harsh on it. It's a business whereby if you're anywhere in town and they've got a shoe zone, you'll go past it and there'll be a sale sign on it, 30% off, 50% off constantly throughout the year. And half the time you look through the window and you go like that, there's no one in there. I think they've got an online presence. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think they have. Yeah.
So they're probably doing sales across from that. Is it something I would buy? Absolutely not. It's got no. I was speaking to an analyst today, recording for Investing Matters. They've got no moat whatsoever. Right. You need some security as to they can protect their market and their margin. It's got nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where will that stock be in a few years' time? It'll actually. Have done exceptionally well and weathered this recession, and everyone's buying cheap shoes because they're no longer, you know, buying their Prada shoes or whatever it is, or it'd be gone.
Yeah,
you know, I think there's a danger, Pete, that other people that are in this stock are now chasing it, and those that got in early are still saying it's going to be going great guns to encourage new people to buy it, so it goes a bit higher. And if it follows the pattern of other stuff that's been heavily ramped and heavily talked up, it will get spanked. It will halve at some point in the next 6 to 12 months. And the people that got in there late will once again be the sacrificial lambs. And the people that were ramping it won't say boo. No apology required because I didn't tell you to buy it. So would I buy it? Absolutely not. There's better quality stocks out there. You know, I've seen fund managers buying it. I'm like, really? You know, is that the best you can pick? Why would you pick that? There's so many quality stocks on the knees right now. You don't need to be in shoe zone.
And it's amazing because you look at the
chart.
I'm hoping
it surprises people and it goes higher, Pete, but I wouldn't buy it.
You look at the chart and it's had two good years. And I think, you know, well done to people who are in it. But yeah, I can't get excited about it. Have you got another one you want to talk about?
Got another one, mate. I'm conscious of the time. So I'm going to run this. I've got two, actually, that I wanted to talk about.
Go on, then.
I'm going to be very, very quick on the first one.
Yeah.
Today's results came out. It's a stock that we've mentioned before. And it's one that actually, and this is again about the markets. It came out with quite good news, and the markets went not interested.
Let me guess it. So,
go on.
Maybe I won't. Is it Halfords HFD?
It's not.
Shit. Oh, sorry. you'll have to edit that.
I'm not editing anything out, mate. You're being cheeky now. Right. Oh. So today, record H1 revenues. Up 9% to $68.5 million. Cost inflation and headcount offset by price increases. Full-year guidance reiterated. Yeah. Posted first half to June revenues. Yeah, I've just said 68.5. Higher operating expenses from cost inflation. Again, that conversation about cost inflation.
Yeah.
And additional recruitment. Adjusted EBITDA, which no one likes unless it's their stock and it's going up, fell 2%. To $24.1 million. Revenues anticipated to grow another 4%, which is not really sky high, is it? Year on year to around $138.8 million. Have you worked it out yet, Pete? I'm talking in dollars.
I'm wondering Somero, S-O-M.
That's the one.
You I see, hold you took it, two and bites I'm of thinking, cherry. Yeah.
Right, two bites of the cherry. There you go. You didn't read the RNS fully, mate. It took you a while to work it out.
Oh.
Right, so today, finished down 4%. I'm thinking, it said all those positive things. It's reiterated it. I'm looking at it and thinking, does no one need any leveling concrete going forward? It's down 4%. It's at £4.15. Granted, it's had a really good run in the past year and a half, from £1.55 to £6.10. Market cap, $243 million. Still paying a nice dividend. We've talked about dividend earlier. PE of 8.2% and a yield of 5.5%. I'd actually forgotten that you held it, Pete. Otherwise, I wouldn't have raised it. But I wanted to raise it as a stock because I'm thinking, what's a person to do? If I was a CEO and I put those out today, other than the cost inflation bit, I'd be like, guys, show me some love. You know what I mean? But that's what happens in the market, Pete.
The thing you didn't mention is they've got a big cash pile as well.
Hopefully
that dividend should be reasonably safe. So, yeah, it is a weird market. It's definitely one of those where, unless you come out with something amazing, the market won't give you much credit.
Not interested, is it?
You know, and it's definitely that kind of mood. I mean, Somero has got a bit of a record or a bit of a history of being quite cyclical and being blown about by weather and stuff. So maybe that's all playing into the reason people might sell. I can't see why I would sell. What I love about Somero is the 90% dominance of the market. I couldn't find another stock that's got that kind of dominance, you know, and they've had this since like 1980 or something. I mean, it's not like they're a fly by night doing really well one minute.
Pete, I'm conscious that I've already done one. And I'm going to do another one very, very quickly so I can give you as much space as you want on the last one, right? So this came out yesterday, right? And this is another company which people are like not quite sure about, okay? I've run some figures here, Pete, right? First half revenues up 46%. Operating profits up 45%, right? Any clues? You saw that yesterday? No?
No, I'm not. It's not. I've got a memory of a goldfish.
All right, okay. So we've got a situation here, Pete, where you've got specialist audio visual distributor.
Midwich, MIDW.
Absolutely.
It's on my list.
Well, there you go. We're on the same sort of way of thinking. But yesterday, again, I saw those and I thought, market's going to love that. Markets went meh. Did you understand why that happened, mate?
I think, again, it's like we said, I think the general mood is so unforgiving and I think there's a lot of projecting forward of the disaster that's about to happen, and it's putting people off buying stocks. I think that's what a lot of it is.
Well, they even came out and said, we see no signs of fall off of demand going forward. Mm. Market still went, yeah, whatever. So I think that's another one. So the price range for that one, 5.26 right now. Price range is £4.40 to £7. P is a bit high at 31. Yield is only 2%. 474 million market cap. You know what I mean? So, anyway, I just want to do a quick one there. You do your next one.
With the growth rate on MIDW, I got a feeling from memory the PE dropped quickly.
It's probably dropping significantly below that. Yeah.
So it might be dropping. The other thing with MIDW is its record's really good. You know, it's been listed for 4 or 5 years, and it's done pretty well for 4 or 5 years. So,
records, audiovisual. Yeah. Records. It's a bit of a joke there, Pete. Sorry, you missed it.
Sorry, what was?
Record, audiovisual. Anyway, moving on. I'm just trying to throw a little joke in there.
Hey, I'm
tonight. Mate, I'm missing all my little nuggets.
It's been a long day. Right.
A long old day. Right, come on. Last one. Go for it.
I want to talk about my roof.
Your renewable roof.
You know what? I'm not even sure what the full name is, but I think it's Atrato or something. Solar something. Let me just look it up. The epic code is roof.
Is a roof.
Atrato,
my roof is on fire.
On-site energy, and it's basically a company that's not been listed that long. It's probably only been listed for I can look, but I think it's probably like might have been around a year now.
Yeah, just under a year, I think, Pete.
Yeah, about 9 months, 8 months. So you're bang on, and it's a fairly new stock then, and what it is going to do, or what it does, is invest in solar panels, solar things on roofs. And it's just today announced a deal where it's done two sort of deals. One of them was where it had acquired another business that does solar roof things. And that had something like 31 different installations. So it's a nice spread of stuff that are already generating income. And it also bought another thing, which was like a project for putting solar panels on some roof somewhere. And that will hopefully generate income in the future. It looks like it pays a reasonable dividend. I think it's around 4%, something like that. And I think if you look at the results, and they're usually tell you what kind of dividend they're looking to pay out. Yeah. I see this as an income portfolio kind of stock. I'm not saying it's one to buy. I'm saying it's one you might want to have a look at. One thing that does worry me is I think the dividend is uncovered. So I don't think it's yet invested in enough solar stuff to be generating the income.
Generating enough revenue. Yeah, that makes sense. Is it sitting at a premium right now, Pete, though?
I think it might be.
Okay.
But again, that's to watch out for. All something to weigh up. But something I've heard as a separate thing to this, I've got a mate who works in the sort of plumbing, heating, that kind of area of things. He runs a company doing that, a small company. But he says solar is going nuts. People are going mad for solar panels. So I just don't think it'd be a bad thing to be invested in. View it more as an income stock, but maybe there's more upside because of the sort of excitement around solar and that as well. I agree
with you. There's lots of money being pushed towards renewables and related across the whole sector. I've been adding to my positions and building the position in that particular sector as well. I think it'll do well whilst we're dealing with this energy crisis as well, Pete. There's opportunities there whilst generating a bit of dividend. So, definitely agree with you on that to possibly investigate that.
Yeah.
Right, I'm conscious of the time, Pete. So let's call it a wrap there. Take the opportunity to thank everybody for listening to the podcast that we've done historically. We hope that you enjoy this one. We'll look forward to hearing your feedback. Give us a tweet. Contact Pete, send Pete some messages, send me some messages as to whether you liked it or not, and retweet and share it and follow it across all the different platforms you're on. As I always say at this time in the podcast, please look after yourself. Please try and look after other people. Do what you can for other people. Show some love and give them the conversation we had recently regarding Steve. Reach out, pick up the phone, go and see some loved ones, spend some time with people that you care about. You know, and make some other people know that you care about them that you haven't been in contact with for a little while, because none of us know how long each of us have got. So just show some kindness, show some love, and do what you can for others in the community, because there's people out there that are really, really finding it difficult already. And we're not in October, we're not in November, we're not in December, when the weather's going to be bleak. So please, please, please show some kindness. We will look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks' time. We hope you enjoy this. Take care. God bless. Lots of love to you all. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.